You are a toy! You weren't the real Buzz Lightyear, you're an action figure! You are a child's plaything!
You are a sad, strange little man.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Toy Story Retrospective Series.
Shall we play a game?
No, thank you.
Are you sure?
Join Matt.
Oh, thank goodness you're here!
Adam.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Huh? He's posing.
And Garrett.
Stand still, Godzilla!
As they look at each film of the Toy Story franchise.
Alright, let's review this one more time.
From 1995's beloved original,
let's go home and play.
To 2022's Lightyear and beyond,
shoots and ladders.
Andy's favorite podcasters will review each Toy Story film and decide individually if the series flies or just falls with style.
Son of a building block!
So get ready to reach for the sky, podcast listeners.
Hello? Check. That better? Great. Everybody hear me?
Percolated Media's Toy Story Retrospective begins now.
All right, let's go.
Toy Story 5, released June 19th, 2026. Budget $250 million. Box office as of today, $597.5 million. And this was directed by Andrew Stanton. Well, we've done one new release this year, soon to be several more. And I think this one has probably made more than both The Mandalorian and Grogu and Supergirl combined.
And Garrett, man.
Yeah.
And, in one weekend.
Yeah. Basically in one weekend. You know, Garrett, we talk about box office. Clearly, there's still a lesson to be learned from Toy Story.
I tell you, and I was going to wait to talk about this until we got to Supergirl, but I might as well mention it now. When we do these, when we put these together, well, when Matt schedules them, we try to get it so that it's a wide release and we get new ears to our podcast, right? Because it's going to make so much money and a lot of people are going to see it and they're going to do a search on Spotify or whatever and say, oh, here's a review of so-and-so. Let's listen to this review. We are one for four because, you know, Supergirl as a press time is not doing that well. We talked about Masters of the Universe. We talked about Mandalorian. But this one, yeah, it's crossed $500 million. So I don't know if it's just because Disney needed to fund that billion-dollar project they did at Disneyland and Disney World, but here we are. Toy Story is in the green again.
Adam, you surprised?
Yeah, I am, because I mean, I thought there would be some legs, but I didn't think that these legs would be freaking erector set length stilts that they would put on this thing to go. This blew me away. I mean, it's the biggest opening, and you know, Toy Story 4, people forget that was still pre-pandemic. Toy Story 3 was probably the biggest critically acclaimed, and those were still when we had extended box office returns and such. So this isn't just a change of the date. Damn. It blew me away when the numbers started coming in for this, because Disney seems to be doing a hit miss with so many of their releases for the last 2 or 3 years.
And when me and Jen saw this, we saw this on the Sunday it was out, and I didn't check any numbers or anything before I went, but I knew that it was going to be huge. When I went to get seats, we were going to get like the earliest freaking showing possible. And I think there were so many, and I send you guys text, there were so many fucking seats taken. I had to wait until like 4 o'clock that there were 2 seats available to see this. So I knew at that point, I'm like, this thing's going to be a juggernaut. And it is.
For further context to illustrate the success, the global weekend debut was the highest in Pixar's history and in the franchise, coming off of 3 and 4, which both did very well. And this was the third highest June opening weekend in history, in an era where I think the takeaway from this that I would illustrate as like the message statement to condense the process of asking, why is this doing so well and those other movies we mentioned bombed? There has to be demand for your IP still. And I think your brand still has to be trusted. One of the things that I think has hurt Star Wars in recent years is that it's no longer this infallible, trusted IP. Not to get into the weeds of past discussions, but you look at superhero movies, you know, that's no longer a guaranteed hit like it used to be. Because even the derided ones, Batman v Superman, etc., Suicide Squad, still made a chunk load of money. And I think with Toy Story, not only is it a routinely trusted brand, in fact, I think it's one of the few still standing, it still feels like an event. We've had six movies, because, yeah, Lightyear, if you're listening to this podcast, I just reminded you that Lightyear exists. And mind you, we talked about that movie last week. But there's only 5 official Toy Story movies in a span of 30 plus years. So they still feel special when they come out, despite seemingly with every installment that natural inclination to say, do we really need another one? So that's kind of my like opening statement to the jury as far as like why this is succeeding where so many other big money IPs are failing.
Well, that was my question going in, and I think we talked about this in the lead up to this opening, is can it justify itself beyond something other than commerce? That was a pretty tall order for them, because I don't think Lightyear justified itself and people did not show up because of it. So after Toy Story 4, I was not clamoring for more. Woody had, quote-unquote, ridden off into the sunset. Everybody was hunky-dory. We had a happily ever after type ending. We were good. I was kind of apprehensive going into this, boys. I gotta say, in the lead up to this, right before it started, I looked at Jen and I'm like, God, I hope I feel as good with this as I did. Even at the end of 4, I felt great at the end of 4. I teared up at the end of 4. Could this make me do the same? That was my question.
I mean, Adam, look, you know, it's been
hunky-dory.
Yeah, I was just going to say, did you say hunky-dory because of the director who was attached to this?
Not meaningful, but, you know.
Wow. Adam, you know, it's been 7 years since Toy Story 4, and you're looking at this coming in now. You know, you're older, some would argue wiser. That's, I guess, depending on the day, but all things considered, did you bring yourself to care when this was being worked on?
Not a single bit. When I heard this was getting made, when I saw the trailers, when I saw the coming soon, take a look at this on my Disney Plus, everything to me screamed cash grab, Aladdin 3, Shrek 4 type stuff. And I wanted nothing to do with this. And I love Toy Story. I love Pixar. But Pixar's had some pretty damn big misses also the last couple years. And this felt like, in case of emergency, break open your collectible and, you know, sell on eBay. So no, if it wasn't for us doing this retrospective, you wouldn't have got me to see it. My kids didn't care. My wife didn't care. Like, it, obviously, this is, guess what, folks? We'll see you in 4 years for Toy Story 6. But nobody in my house cared about this whatsoever. And that included me.
I think this one had both an easier task than 4, but also a more challenging. I think 4 had a larger degree of skepticism from its announcement than this one did, because it was immediately following something that, for all intents and purposes, was complete. Like, you can watch 1, 2, and 3 and never watch the other ones and feel like you got a completely cohesive beginning, middle, and end. So the fact that you immediately make a 4th one, I think you're putting the cart before the horse, and you don't want to be the one that breaks the camel's back. But with 5, it's a little bit easier, because now you have something to follow up on. Like, you have new characters, you have a new child that's the focal point. So it's a little bit of an easier task in that regard, because you have more of a paper trail. But the challenge is now clearly 4 and 5 have now become sort of a, I almost call it Toy Story the Next Generation, because I feel like this franchise now with 4 and 5, and I'm not just doing this to troll Lightyear, everyone. I'm just saying that's a spinoff. I'm talking about the core installments. This franchise has now really been passed down to the next generation. Like, I think now my offspring, this is the first one that's come out in their lifetimes. And clearly looking around that theater, everyone else was the exact same way, because you could tell people mostly my age or older were bringing their families. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a surreal feeling that I have not fully experienced or ever will really experience something like that again. At least I don't think for a long time.
You take your kids?
Oh, yeah. Now, granted, they would have gone regardless if I had to review this for obligation, because I don't feel to the degree that Adam did about his lack of desire to see this. If anything, I felt better about the marketing for this than I did for the previous one because of how much I hated Forky in those trailers. Mm-hmm. And to the movie's credit, which we discussed last time or 2 weeks ago, they really won me over. And it's, if anything, the marketing was kind of a disservice, like to kind of lower your guard and your expectations. This one, nothing was bad. Like, I didn't rebel against anything. But I thought the whole toys versus tech thing, I didn't want to walk into a movie and feel like I'm being browbeaten as a parent.
Yeah.
Which I think that's the cynical side of my brain could certainly be how this movie is perceived and how it's being delivered, especially coming from Disney, which is not above being heavy-handed with their commentary.
I agree. I think once when I saw the first full trailer and it told me what this movie was about, I just went, well, that's the trailers and the marketing. It felt obvious and on the nose. So for me, the person that I am now and the age that my kids are, it wasn't helpful because it seems so obvious that that's what you would do. Again, from a marketing standpoint.
And I do want to address the elephant in the room. I don't know, Matt, if you were going to talk about this, but this is the first Toy Story that John Lasseter has literally nothing to do with. And it seems like every goddamn retrospective this year, we got to talk about somebody who's had allegations against him. I'm not going to go into that, but that was another question I had. Andrew Stanton has been with this franchise off and on since the very beginning, but the heart, I feel in a lot of ways, was Lasseter. And another question I had was, could they do this in a heartfelt way as if Lasseter had not stepped down and took his ass to fucking Skydance Animation?
Well, Stanton's an interesting guy because he's kind of one of the brain trust of Pixar when it first started. And Finding Nemo was his promotion. He was a co-director on A Bug's Life, co-wrote all of the previous films. So his upbringing is kind of embedded into this franchise. But I gotta be honest, as someone who really did not care for Finding Dory whatsoever, I had that in the back of my brain going into this movie. I didn't want to have the feeling of apathy. And that one really felt superfluous in a way that, like, Toy Story 4 and Inside Out 2 did not. You know, Adam, you're much more of an animation junkie than Garrett is. Was that perception something that you shared?
Specifically that title. The other stuff that he had worked on is exactly why I had a reason to be excited. I mean, WALL-E, to me, is an absolute piece of art that is hard to find in this world. But I didn't know what Stanton movie we were going to get. He could deliver some absolute beauties, and then he could make sure that he's doing his job for the studio and keeping them around.
But yeah, that's kind of the, like, spiel. And the fact that, I mean, a $250 million budget for an animated film, like, we're in an era where that is now second only to Tangled as the most expensive animated film that Disney/Pixar has ever made.
Wow. And Tangled did, like, they created new technologies for some of that film. So, damn.
And I wonder, though, how much of that money went to Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's wedding? Can we address that right now?
Coming this weekend, Madison Square Garden.
Or is it going to go to the Oscar pitch for her to get that? Because I honestly believe the only reason she did the song to this fucking movie was to get a fucking Oscar.
I think she grew up with it as a kid and loves it. I'm truly going to give her that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they added a couple extra zeros on the check. Didn't hurt.
I'm sure that didn't hurt. I might be a sucker, but I'm going to believe she loves it.
I'm not giving her any credit, especially with her taste in men. And I feel like the only reason that they got hurt is because nobody wants to hear Randy Newman's voice.
Yeah. I did see his name. He's back for this one.
He did the score. And I was grateful I didn't have to hear his voice, but I was also disappointed because I'm like, well, there goes 10 minutes of material for my review. And the other thing, one thing that in the marketing that raised my eyebrow like The Rock. Oh, sorry, Dwayne Johnson, speaking of copyright infringement, is because, yeah, he's going to, they brought him into Disney with this Moana remake that's coming out in a couple weeks. Holy crap. Going on a lot of tangents today, everybody, but that's kind of appropriate given the movie we're about to talk about. The inclusion of Woody. I didn't see the fulfillment in bringing him back. no matter how big or small his role would be, because Tom Hanks has gotten to the point in his career where he is okay being a supporting character. I don't think it's an ego thing, but I didn't really feel like his return was something I fully cared about.
Yeah, and I didn't know how that was going to be handled. I mean, they made it seem like a really big deal in the trailers that I saw, and I think that was just to maybe calm everybody's nerves if they didn't put him in there. But I think you could have cut this trailers a whole different way to show more of what this movie was than what we got.
They told us they were going to zig and they zagged. This marketing was very misleading, not the least of which is telling us that Woody was going to play a huge part in this, because he really doesn't.
No, and it, but it's to the point also where it's like, why is he even here?
Well,
in the movie ahead of time, but I feel like this movie could have functioned fully without him, and it honestly would have been, in some respects, better for it. Because it kind of undercuts the whole point of making Jesse the main character.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we'll definitely get into that for sure.
Well, before we get into the movie, let's reiterate, because this could be some people's first-time review of a new release film. We spoil the entire movie, so if you have not seen the film and you are going to listen to this podcast, you will do so at your own discretion. And in addition, we have not said a single word to each other about this movie whatsoever. So when we say we go into this blind, like it is, we say that to a T, like hand to God, none of us have said a word to each other, not even in side conversation.
No, and a lot of podcasts pass notes to tell each other what they're going to discuss. We don't do that. All we do is tell each other that we've seen it. That's it.
Yep.
And on that note, Matt, you said you saw this opening weekend, right?
Yeah, my wallet and my eardrums were kind of hurting because of it. Because between, let's see, four tickets.
Oh, my God.
We split two things of popcorn. And the boys went through the popcorn like the Flash eating popcorn in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Like, it's just stay out of the way. So because I have three, Harry didn't put it in the middle seat, which is where he was sitting. So Riker and Logan are trying to pass it back and forth like a basketball. And I was giving them the stick. I'd be like, if that bucket moves one more goddamn time, I'm taking it. They're smart, but they also are. It doesn't help that Logan's going through the mind phase, which any parent knows about. So, yeah, and I'm not one of those people who comes with the Ziploc bags to pour the popcorn in. I'm like, that's too much goddamn work, especially if I'm paying as much money as I am for tickets and concessions. They should be paying me to do that. So that's the short answer way of me saying, yes, I did see this on opening weekends, and I'm about down 100 and something bucks.
Oh, my God. I was dreading going to this because after my Mandalorian story, I did not want to be in a theater surrounded by kids again. But surprisingly enough, me and Jen got the normal seats we always get. Everybody was very well behaved. We had a whole family next to us who they ate this movie up like Matt's son ate that popcorn. It was pretty incredible.
Look, yeah, plural. Like it was like freaking. Oh, my God.
And I will say this, though, and I've seen it now. Let's see, we've done a lot of new releases this year. I saw it for Supergirl as well. I hate this little thing that they've been doing with the minions in these fucking movies, where they're sitting there with the fucking laptops, messing with the trailers and shit. And I'm just like, oh my God, you want people to come see this, and yet you are interrupting every single little fucking thing. Oh my God, that drives me crazy. No more of that, please. Believe it or not, everybody was very well behaved. It was a packed theater, as I mentioned, and yeah, it was a well-behaved theater.
I went the Monday after the second weekend.
Wow.
11 o'clock in the morning. Sorry, Goudreau kids, but Uncle Adam had still had a bucket of popcorn all to himself.
Fucking asshole.
And there was a couple of families in there at that time, which was kind of nice to see. All of them remarkably well-behaved, which I was very happy to see. But it also let me kind of know how this was playing with some of the families that it was geared for. But yeah, just after the second weekend, it was the new AMC XL because, you know, they're trying to make Disney happy by promoting these large screens that are not IMAX freaking themed. Way to go, Dune. And it was, yeah, good time. But again, only about 20 total people in my theater when I saw it.
Speaking of popcorn buckets, I did buy the Buzz Lightyear one.
I was going to ask you if you got one.
Because that one, aesthetically, I could feel comfortable putting on my shelf and not having to explain it. Because some of the other ones, I feel like you have to justify purchasing it.
Yeah. Oof. Supergirl. Jesus.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah, they had that fucking Lobo
that foreskin
one.
Cup?
Yeah.
Oh, no. The foreskin cup? Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah, that one, too.
But no, mine had the, and I almost bought it because it was the Luxo ball as a popcorn bucket.
Hey, that's cool.
So just that classic, simple Luxo ball. I was like, oh, that's nice.
What's the Luxo? What's the Luxo ball?
That ball with a star on it.
The blue?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Cool.
It's just a classic Pixar logo to me that I'm like, that's that's a nice way to go.
That's the way they labeled the seats in the apps, too.
Yep. In the apps. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, well, let's get into the movie, because believe it or not, we actually talk about film on this discussion and not our theater experiences.
This one's layered, man. This is a more layered plot than I was expecting, for sure.
Well, I feel like we say that about every Toy Story movie.
That's true.
Because one thing about the Toy Story movies that they've always done well, the trailers give you a baseline, but they keep a lot of the intricacies very close to the chest. Because they're going to rip it out of your chest like the guy from Temple of Doom. You know, because I went into this movie, I'm like, all right, when am I going to cry? If I'm going to cry. Because I had that in the back of my mind that I had myself mentally prepared so that way I don't make eye contact with any of my kids. Well, speaking of making eye contact, I had to do so for 20 minutes by the time the movie actually started because I watched nothing but trailers and trailers for trailers.
Minions.
Minions are the bane of my existence.
Same.
Like, I will never review those movies. To me, they're the Transformers of animated films, where it's just appealing to the lowest common denominator. If you're loud, you're obnoxious and colorful, people will go to see it. And apparently, it will never go away now that it's embedded at Universal Parks now as well. I'm happy the kids like it, but we need to raise our standards and get them out of my face. I don't want to be driving by a Wendy's and see that cycloptic bastard sitting next to her when I'm about to go into the drive-thru. Tangent over, I promise. And then, something I was not expecting, the movie opens on a deserted island, to which my brain said, okay, this has to be a fantasy sequence, like make-believe.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was I wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? They all start that way.
Except for four.
Yeah, four starts with a rescue sequence. This one, I thought the same thing, man. I thought, is this Bonnie's imagination? But it turns out, like, this is actually happening. So bizarre. It felt to me like a tribute to Castaway.
Well, if it was, that should have been a whole shipment of Woody's. But instead, we see the shipment of Buzz Lightyears. It's like a new high-tech edition where they get stuck on an island. They awaken and they survey their surroundings, and I thought, are we going to get Send Help too? And they realize that they're stranded, and the Buzzes, they set up camp like castaways. They look in the sky, they see a bright star, and they all immediately assume it's Star Command, because if you've seen the previous films, you know that anytime a Buzz Lightyear sort of like awakens subconsciously, they think they're the real Buzz Lightyear. So this is the third time we've done this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about something that could have been left on the cutting room floor. I'm kind of glad there's a reason they cut this from three. Because if you remember, this was one of the original plot lines before three turned into what it was.
I do not like all these Buzz Lightyears every time they come on screen. I'm going to start my review off with that. It just annoyed me each time. The uniqueness of Buzz wore off after the first film, and they are struggling to find something else to do with him. And this, I don't know if this was right. Like, I don't know if this was the correct way to take him.
I dug this.
Did you really? God damn it, Adam.
I did. No, I did not take this as the Castaway thing, but I've heard that on the interblogs. And such, these kids today. But there's been stories, and because I collect toys and figures, there was a number of these giant shipping containers that had gone overboard crossing the ocean. And a bunch of us who are in trade groups with Sideshow Collectibles and things like that got delay notices for months because our toys are at the bottom of the Pacific. So what? This to me felt like, So this felt like people who know that kind of thing. But I could see the Castaway part as well. But I'm struck 30 seconds in, this is gorgeous. I didn't think there was anywhere else to go animation-wise that you could keep plussing it. This feels like another pretty big step up. This thing looks amazing.
There is one scene in particular where I really see the difference in how far, again, how far they've come, even since 2019. I wasn't really feeling it yet, but you could definitely tell.
So my whole, I guess, internal logic as I'm watching this opening was saying, how is this going to tie into the rest of the plot? And I still don't feel like I fully got that answer in a way that I could be satisfied with. I'm sort of in agreement with Garrett. I think the movie would have been better serviced if this was removed. It almost feels like they felt they shortchanged Tim Allen in the last movie. So we're having to have him record more lines.
And I don't know if you guys have read the fact that Tim Allen, I guess, after he recorded the lines, the people recording him were like, he sounds way too old. So he had to go back to a vocal coach to get to get the voice inflection back that he did way back in 1995. And, you know, they're all at that point at this point, you know. Yeah, I think Tom Hanks did too. 70,
he's 70. Tom Hanks, the pitch isn't quite as high.
Uh-huh.
Joan Cusack is a little bit more bass.
Yeah, she's more bass. But yeah, I found that interesting when I read that. And
this comes with age. Like, it's exactly. You can't fight it.
It's funny because he's doing a sitcom for Disney right now, you know, which Shifting Gears, which, you know, good show. He's also, at this point, he's that old toy. They're about to put him on the shelf.
So they believe that their mission is to rendezvous with Starkman. So they go full Bregalion, build a raft, and escape the island. So apparently all it took was for Tom Hanks and Castaway to get stuck with 50 sentient Wilson volleyballs, and he could have gotten off that island a lot sooner. So that's how the movie opens. And then we have a second opening with flashbacks of Jessie being with her previous owner. So we kind of have two false starts to open the movie. And in this one, I said to myself, okay, there is no way you lead with this and not have some kind of, like, emotional resonance with this plot line. Like, independent of her being the quote-unquote main character, this set up for me the idea that there was going to be some payoff with Jessie that I could have guessed given her increased screen time, but this is kind of playing your cards. You might as well be playing them face up on the table.
Yeah, I just, to me, it showcased that it was going to be her movie, and I was good with that. Like, it, to me, it's perfectly fine to ship that. I mean, you can kind of say the second one is hers, but really that's almost Woody's story part two. But this is letting me know we're in a new trilogy of Toy Story. You know, it's almost like Andy's story wrapped up. We got four. This is five, but this is no longer those toys. This is Bonnie and her toys now. And it's a shifted perspective.
Yeah, especially because Bonnie was the one who made her the sheriff, if you remember the previous one. Yeah,
exactly. And if you guys recall, my big beef with the end of Toy Story 4 was the fact that at the end, when you have all the nonsense going on in the RV, Jessie's not the one who takes control. And when I saw this, Matt, I thought the exact same thing. I'm like, okay, well, now they're making a movie around her. Now they're going to make her earn that badge, I guess. And yeah, I was with this too. Like, I knew there was going to be an emotional resonance with this. And I'm glad they set it up like this. Now, but you cut out those buzzes and it makes it even more powerful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like I feel like this should have opened the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, part of four, the credits is the montage of Andy transitioning to Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've done ones that are outside of like the continuous reality. So I just found the opening to this to be a little disconcerting from my critical brain.
Yeah.
And we see that Emily wrote her name and address on Jessie's chap so she'd never get lost. First time they've mentioned that. Not complaining. I have questions about this later on, but we do cut to present. Quote, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to call him Schrodinger's chaps. They'll come back.
Yeah. I think I saw Shawn Michaels wear those. And I'm thinking, Devin, we're probably a couple years later. Cause she's like eight at this point and she's wedding Forky. And what's the one that she's wearing for Forky?
I don't even get her name. See, I thought at the end of four, I thought he called her Knifey, but I swear
Karen.
He calls her. Okay.
Who is it?
Karen Beverly.
Oh, okay.
All right. Way to go, Bonnie.
I like this too. We're finally getting to a kid playing with these toys, which is what this series has opened every one of these, well, almost every one of these movies with. And yeah, this is exactly what a little girl would imagine, you know, a wedding. And of course, they're going to take this with Buzz and run with it. But I'm not having much issue with the exception of the multiple buzzes with the opening of this film.
What I love about this playtime element that they do is the animation with it. It feels very much across the Spider-Verse. They did this when they delved into Spider-Gwen's. It almost looked painted and just very brush-strokey. And it just reminds me of sequences in Princess and the Frog, where it went back to a deco type of art style. It's a little different. It's not as clean. And I just love the way that it looks and plays and flows. I think it looks really good.
Yeah, I love the watershed look of the playtime scenes. And yeah, I love that that is what they're using to illustrate Bonnie's imagination. I'm with you. I really dug those as well. Not enough of it, honestly.
Well, we get two instances of this movie of shipping.
That's true.
With these weddings. So I guess this is kind of putting the cart before the horse, so to speak.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the beginning, too, with all the buses and the rafts.
Yeah, well, three instances of shipping then. But we see Bonnie's a little nervous because she's got neighbor twins next door, and Jesse attempts to kind of discreetly initiate a meeting with them, but Bonnie's nervous and she runs inside. So we're still seeing that, like, the shy little girl we saw in 3, that's still the same character, even though she's aged up a bit. Because this movie is all about sort of the shyness that the most modern generation of kids feel because they're not acclimating to each other in a physical sense as much as they used to, for two reasons: COVID and technology. Like, I think this is also as much of a statement on parenting during the pandemic as much as it is about technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Matt, this might be a question that will probably be left unanswered because there might not be a good answer for it, but do you have a grasp on the timeline here where this lands?
It's after 4. That's my
fair enough.
But it's got to be at least be a couple years, because she starts out at a daycare in 3. She's going into, is it kindergarten in 4?
Yeah, kindergarten.
One of those two. And she's now in like early elementary school, so it's at least been a couple years. But I don't think there's a definitive time, because you don't really want to date these movies.
Yeah, that's true. But with all the technology here, I mean, I was wrestling with that as I was watching it.
Yeah, because you're trying to figure out like how advanced is the technology going to be. Because before we even get into that, I think that there are parts in this movie where the technology feels too far advanced in some aspects. Mm-hmm. And then there's parts where it feels like when the iPad first came out and it only did select things. This feels like a movie that was made by people, and this is ironic coming from Pixar, who are pioneers of technology, by old people who don't 100% know how things work anymore. But Bonnie asks her parents why she has trouble making new friends, and they don't want to have the difficult conversation. So what do the parents do? They try to find a solution. Yeah. So what they do is, you know, Jesse and Bullseye, they go to the twins' house to try to see like why they don't play with Bonnie. And they come across the, for all intents and purposes, a graveyard of the toys, who tell them that the age of toys is over and that technology has taken over. And I half expected to see a Terminator skull in the background, because this is, if you're a toy, this is the nuclear apocalypse.
Bad Bunny's one of these toys too, right?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
No, in Bonnie's house. Blaze's play shed.
Okay. Yeah, a little bit of a doom and gloom feel right now.
Look, that's no stranger for these movies. I mean, they're...
No.
You know, the second one's all about coming to terms with your kid aging up, and your time is immortal, but theirs is... The amount of time you're with them is finite. Now the toys are feeling the fear of becoming obsolete.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always been about what are you going to be replaced by, and do you have any worth anymore?
Yeah, now it's like you're being replaced by something that, as we'll find out, has the right intentions. But, because this movie is also really about how, like, if we just learn to communicate again, we could actually solve problems.
Yeah.
You mentioned in the beginning, Matt, that you were scared you're going to get browbeaten with the fact that technology is taking over toys. And, you know, I got to say, for the first half hour of this, I'm feeling that exact thing. Now, it goes away because Jesse's the one who's drilling it in our heads that this is all bad. They need to play with us. Toys need to be played with, not these lights and these screens. Are you feeling that as well?
Initially, yes. Yeah. There comes a point where I feel like her arc kind of grows beyond that. But she's also, the reason why I don't dog on her is because, well, two reasons. One, she's with a horse, not a dog. And number two, she's already been replaced and has severe like PTSD and doesn't want to have that happen to anyone else. So like her being overprotective in that sense, I buy much more than Woody's, I don't want to call it his like obsessive attachment to Andy. Hers, I buy a little bit more, especially with technology, because that's clearly a threat they've never had to deal with. But even so, there was foreshadowed because there's the part in 3 where Andy looks for his phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember that. So I like that there's just a little bit of unintentional foreshadowing that this day would come. But Jesse assures, because they get on the roof and they see every household is obsessed with screen time. And I was thinking, where's Jim Carrey in Batman Forever across the the other side of town? Because that's all I can think of with this.
Hard not to.
Jesse assures herself that Bonnie will not become a tech child. That's the thing every parent says until they say, I give up.
All right. So I have two parents here. Obviously, I'm not one myself. I got to ask you guys, especially Adam, how long before you kept all the screens and all the iPads away from your kids?
We didn't do it very, very long. Once it seemed like a natural extension that we did with them, it was a part of it, but we did do a, okay, that's enough, put it away. Again, mine are a little older, but technology was always around because we always had it, adult-wise. You know, Laura and I, we always had it. So we had screens, we had that, but they were, God, I'm trying to think, they had to be around Bonnie's age when they first got their first lily pad or whatever it was called, the proper version that's out. Yeah, I mean, age-wise, that's about right. And when you see some of these kids that look like teenagers in their rooms, just slumped over with a phone or a computer, yeah, they know what they're talking about in the real world.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing this movie does very well. And I think it is more inclined to appeal to us, as in Gen X and millennials, as opposed to the kids that are going to this with their parents. And I think that's the transition that they've done from 1995 to 2026. And it feels natural. And that is one thing that I will give this movie complete credit for, is when I saw the trailers for this, I really did feel, God, we got to go through like the net in toys, like we're gonna see these toys be scared of the net like Sandra Bullock was in 1995. But no, it goes to different places. But this whole anxiety and the feeling of being taken over by this, it is browbeaten by Jesse, as we've mentioned, but it's also handled very well because it is that dread that parents feel, like, okay, when do I give them this thing and have them alienate themselves from us and the world?
Well, yeah, Jesse's almost playing the parental online groups and online message boards that, oh my God, they can never touch technology. Oh, they can never do this, or they're going to run.
He's Tim Gore.
Basically, yeah. But I'm glad that it was kind of a bait and switch from what I thought I was going to get, because Jesse sets up the threat and then the threat shifts. And I'm really happy for that.
Well, I like that. This is what I think distinguishes Toy Story 4 and 5 from the previous trilogy, but it's still the same DNA. I feel like 4 and 5 are made much more for the parents who grew up watching the previous films that we take our families to and they equally enjoy. Whereas back in the day, not to use that phrase because I normally don't, but now this movie makes me feel really old as fuck. Back in the day, it was, you know, you dragged your parents to see things they tolerated. But Pixar was always good at appealing to parents. But I feel like these two movies have been really made for my generation, looking back, because a lot of us have, you know, families of our own now, and we've seen a whole generation now too come behind us, which is why I think these have a little bit more reflection in them and are much more about, because there's an undercurrent of this in the previous three that we talked about. These 4 and 5 are much more about parenting and knowing when to let go and rediscovering your purpose. Like sort of in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the technology that's handled in the way that like co-parenting or divorces and step-parents that I think is in here as well, which I shouldn't say is unbecoming of Pixar because they're masters of embedding that type of stuff in simple material. But I felt like going into this movie, I wasn't prepared to give it the amount of credit that I will ultimately. But unbeknownst to Jesse, Bonnie's parents order her this frog-like tablet named Lily Pad, and I guarantee you Disney's going to sell a shitload of these at their parks.
Hell, isn't there a popcorn bucket of it?
Yep. And Leapfrog, which is what this is, made their own version of this. So at least the manufacturer that they're kind of making their pseudo villain is in on the gag.
And you know, we reviewed Masters of the Universe just a few weeks ago, and I was thinking, God, did they get Kristen Wiig for this? Like, it kind of sounded like Kristen Wiig. No, it's just this chick from Past Lives, which is a good movie from a few years ago. So I like the fact that they got someone who is not widely known to be this voice. It just kind of fits in with the rest of the toys, because we will get some very well recognizable voices later on.
Greta Lee, it's an interesting voice. I think it's good voice work. But it's kind of Gabby all over again, where it's you think she's going to be the full-fledged villain and she's really not.
Okay, you're hitting on something that is a critique I have of this film, in that it feels, more than any of them, it feels so recycled from the previous film.
I would say recycled only in the sense that I feel like it calls back to an instance or a scene from all of the previous films. There's clearly, with Jesse, that's going right back to 2. The lily pad is kind of Gabby all over again. And we have bringing Woody back to kind of tie into the first 3. And the whole like previous generation thing being made to be thrown away, that's Lotso's whole thing in 3.
Yeah.
So I do feel like there's a little bit of... I would say this one's the least inventive of the 5. But my counter is always, well, how much is there left to mine? I mean, you're on number 5 at this point.
And judging by the box office returns, there's going to be a 6.
Well, of course there is. You got to round out this trilogy.
Yep.
Adam, are you feeling like you want to be with Smarmy Pants and have a recycling bin next to it?
I don't. Just because as much as I can see little nods to it, I think they're doing it so much better here than they did in 4 and even in 3. Because it shifts pretty quick. I mean, it gets going. You get Lilypad. You think it's the villain. But then it's pretty obvious she's not bad. And you kind of almost know there's something else that's going to be going on. And it shifts gears pretty quickly. I mean, this movie's only like an hour 35 before credits. It, to me, didn't feel like it ever is spinning its wheels. Except when RC shows up later. But... I actually like the way they're going with it quite a bit. I'll just say it here, though. You brought it up that these are starting to feel like a little more for the parents, a little more for you, a little more for me, a little more for Garrett than they were, you know, with Toy Story 1 and 2, even though that there were elements there. This is Inside Out, the Toy Story edition.
Okay. I'm so glad you brought this up, because at one point,
especially 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this felt like Inside Out 3 to me, because at one point we get so focused on Bonnie that we have lost complete track of where the toys are. And that is Inside Out. And I know there's a producer on this from Inside Out. And yeah, I definitely felt that. And that is a big problem I have with this film.
Well, it's also tough because Bonnie is much more of a character than Andy has ever been.
Yes.
Like screen right. time, like she actually drives the plot in a way that Andy never really did. Like Andy always drove Woody's plot for the most part and Buzz in the first one. But in this movie, everyone's trying to act on Bonnie's behalf, but we're also seeing Bonnie try to have her own story arc independent of the toys.
Yeah,
which is why I think it feels so close to Riley.
Agreed. I think toys are a part of this, but the toys are not. It's not the toys' story in Toy Story. And I'll be different than Garrett. I'm okay with it. I actually think this movie, it hits me where it needs to because of what it does with Bonnie. And I really appreciate it for that. But it's just something I noticed that just, you know, when you're like, what's different? What's different? You're like, oh, this is Inside Out. And these are the emotions. And they're driving Bonnie towards they're trying to heal her in a way.
Well, it's also the thing of Lilypad is basically the exact same functionality as anxiety.
Yeah.
Where she's the antagonist, but not a villain per se.
Yeah. She just is.
Yeah. But
she's Miles Dyson.
Well, she also ends up getting thrown out too, eventually, you know, yeah. Like you're right.
Oh, she commits suicide.
Yeah.
Or tries.
Which I could not believe when we get there. I was like, holy shit. I can't believe like this was that to me. That was like more shocking than them all about to be burning in that incinerator. To the surprise of no one, Lily becomes the center of Bonnie's attention and the toys are all concerned. So Jesse tells Lily that she's just doing what she was designed to do, which is to make Bonnie develop friendships, because this movie is also a remake of Mean Girls set in an elementary school. Because,
dude,
look, to be fair, from my experience as a scout and as a camp counselor many moons ago, girls get very clicky at a young age, and they're also a lot meaner than boys tend to be. especially when it comes to emotional damage. Boys have no problem like getting into fistfights and beating each other up. The girls, it's all like snarky comments and ostracizing the outsider. And I think this movie portrays that very well, because I hate these three bitches.
Oh, I fucking can't stand them. And I can't stand what they do to Bonnie. And that's what I rebel against with this movie, is we have gone to lengths of fucking just beating this girl down emotionally. It's inside out. And that is a big problem I have. And it becomes about the toys trying to steer her to somebody who will make it better. But this I did not like. I'll be right up front and say I did not like any part of this whatsoever.
I think it's perfect.
Yeah, it's shockingly authentic.
Yep.
And I think it's designed to make you feel that way, Garrett.
Interesting. I thought this was designed to revolve around toys because it's called Toy Story, but okay.
Yeah, no, I feel like I've had my daughter crying, scene that happens later on, and I was almost in tears when I was explaining it to my wife. I'm like, I just felt like I've lived this part.
But Jessie does the break in case of emergency. She calls Woody on a walkie-talkie ask for advice on what to do. And I thought this was going to be the only instance we saw him in the movie.
I did too.
I was hoping.
I think it should have been.
Yeah, and by the way, how fucking powerful is that walkie-talkie, number one? Number two, what
Oh my God, now we're getting into like the... This one, I have a lot of questions about how powerful this technology is. Yeah. These batteries should be inside a nuclear reactor with this type of bandwidth.
And number two, what'd they have Keanu Reeves for? A half hour? He gets like two lines this entire
film. The guy had during a break from shooting John Wick 5.
Yeah.
And while he was sitting in the break room having water or something, they said, hey, come in the booth and record our lines.
I don't think he... I bet they never got him back in a booth.
I was thinking that they took lines from 4 and from put them in this. Yeah,
because he improvised so much, you know. Mm-hmm. I think he did as much work in this movie as Key and Peele did.
Well, speaking of which, you can also tell in this movie, they didn't get a lot of people back.
No.
No, they did not.
But because there's still too many, though. That's the problem I have.
Yeah, this is the one that I feel, much like 4, if you like the side characters, this movie says too bad.
Yeah.
It's like Ham, Potato Head, Slinky, Rex. If you like them, you'll enjoy looking at them, but they don't do much. Again,
big problem. Everybody gets... And even Bonnie's original toys that she brought into the last one, everybody gets two lines and then they're sidelined.
Yeah, because like if you notice, like Timothy Dalton's not here for the Prickle Pants. Mm-hmm. Kristen Shaw, I think, gets one line.
Yep.
So clearly that money didn't go to everybody, but there was more than enough to go around, because I do feel like I'm yearning for some of these characters to feel important again. But at the same time, that's kind of what the movie's about.
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly? Feeling important?
How do you exist in a world that is overly crowded? And Woody says that they're coming across abandoned toys due to tech as well, which makes me think they're like going to orphan shelters and just grabbing toys off the sidewalk, basically, because they make this sound like they're saving toys from like sex slavery with the acts they're doing.
No. Yeah, the inclusion of Woody. I mentioned when we started recording that I was hoping that they would find a way to justify Woody being here. I'm glad to see Woody here. I am not glad to see what they do with him, though. He could be out of this film, and this film could function just as well.
Yeah.
And they also do something that's kind of annoying, and I hate this in plot in movies to create artificial tension. Buzz overhears the conversation, and Woody thinks that Jessie wants him to come back to help.
Ugh.
And that causes animosity when he actually comes back. They never felt like they had to go to a love triangle.
I know.
But they pull that card here.
You get love triangle? I didn't take it that way.
Oh, it's all right, so then love
I took
triangle.
I took it as, I don't know what you'd call it. Insert Adrian Lynn knockoff here. As the toy turns or something. And then I completely forgot, because we cut back to the high-tech Buzzes who arrive at a shipping dock.
Yep.
They use a crane to see above the clouds, which was a fun callback to the claw.
Oh my God. But this is... Okay. This is frickin' Oakland port, and I cannot believe just how they nail this entire port when they have those giant devices that they use to pull the shipping containers off, those that were the inspiration for the AT-ATs for George Lucas when he was a kid. My train goes by this port every single day, and I could tell the animators just walked down the street from Pixar, and... This is so glorious to me, especially the fog. Like, this is San Francisco, Oakland port. It is so perfect. I love this.
But they think Star Command, but they all freeze because they plot hole here. why are they acting like toys when they don't believe they're toys?
Yeah, big issue.
Because the dock worker goes by and they just freeze, almost like it's in their protocol. But that kind of breaks the rules they've established with the previous films, based on what I can recall.
Yeah, the rules once again get stressed like Teflon in this thing.
But they nevertheless continue the mission. And then we cut back to Jesse and Bullseye, which this is the most screen time Bullseye's gotten in this whole series combined.
Yeah.
Which I've had before because he's surprisingly expressive for a character who doesn't speak. Well, I should hold that thought because he technically does speak in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
And they stow away in Bonnie's backpack because she's going to a sleepover to kind of try and blend in. And man, these mean girls from hell just browbeat this poor girl for still playing with toys.
It's not Kick-Ass 2, but it's close.
it's Kick-Ass 2 if it took place during nap time.
Yes. Jesus.
I had no idea that we were watching a Stephen King movie this week. These bullies.
Oh, yeah, this is Carrie.
It is. Yes, and I did not like being here. I hated seeing this girl just get beaten down. It drove me nuts watching these parts.
I hated it. However, God dang, do I feel the authenticity to this.
So she leaves them in the car because she got embellished for playing with toys. So she takes Lily in with her. Jesse and Bullseye try to see what Bonnie's doing, but they get found by Jonathan and Martha Kent just walking by. Who they notice that she has the address written on her chap and just choose to drive her there. This is sure pretty convenient, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but this is the most me and Jen laughed the entire film. We fucking love this.
Because of the Smallville reference?
Well, that too. Just because they're like, what? What? And me and Jen are looking at each other like, oh, yeah. That's pretty much like how me and you talk to each other.
Holy shit, that's authentic.
Yeah.
Because they see it's Emily's old house, so they get taken there and they see the house is still standing and they get on a real horse and, wow, they learn how to animate animals.
Okay, yeah. This is the part I was talking about earlier when I said I saw the advances in technology at a certain scene. This scene with this horse is fucking gorgeous. It was the only time in the movie I kind of wished I'd bought the 3D tickets for it because it just looked amazing. And like, you just cannot tell. They can almost get photorealistic at this point.
No, I get the sense. Like, this looks more authentic than that CGI Lion King abomination they put out.
Yes.
And I don't know how that's possible. Like, I seriously don't. But then the two of them crash into the barn. And Jesse gets stuck under a barrel of hay when Blaze, who's the new owner of the house, she finds Bullseye and takes him inside.
Okay, did you guys take the Bonnie and Blaze names as being something like they belong together kind of thing? Because that's how I read it.
No, but that's a good call.
Never crossed my mind, but yeah.
God, I just think too much about these films, I guess.
Who names their kid Blaze?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah.
Nowadays?
It's such an old school name that I don't know if there's anybody.
But this town feels like it's Berkeley to me. Well, so, especially with the old horse? Hippies.
Are you kidding?
I was trying to look up where there's stables and, there's some in the Oakland Hills that are right here. Mm. But that old hippie couple with the frickin' bug, it's just...
Back in Bonnie's room, which, you know, 3 and 4 jumps quite a bit between, like, the A story and the B story. Like, going from Woody to Sunnyside. This one, I feel like, is the most burdened by having too many characters.
Absolutely.
And I really feel like it loses perspective in a way that the other ones don't.
Yeah, with having two writers on this one, I feel like they wrote separately more than wrote together.
Well, you know how you can tell with that? You can tell with that when you have writing credits and there's an and in it, it means they wrote it separately. If you see it in, as in the symbol in, it means they wrote it together. I don't recall if they were together or not, but yeah, it does feel like we are jumping around a lot and it does get jumbled quite a bit.
Yeah, not as jumbled as Woody making a surprise return, and boy, they let him have it that he's getting old because there's that brown on the back of his head that's like a bald spot and his stuffing is out of place, so he looks out of shape, which... Garrett, do you know the anatomical reason why that actually makes sense?
I was going to ask you.
So, you know how in the last one he had his voice box removed?
Mm-hmm.
The stuffing readjusted, and it filled that spot.
Okay. Thank you for making sense of that, because I did have that written down.
Yeah, because I didn't realize I'd get fat shaming in a Toy Story movie.
Yeah,
that's what we get.
And fucking bald shaming, for Christ's sake.
That part's okay. You know,
and the problem with that, though, I wish Don Rickles was still alive, because he would have been the one to deliver lines.
That's a good God, point. Yeah.
Great point.
But yeah, he just shows back up and I'm like, everyone's like, oh, good to see you. Like, no one's really mad that he's been gone for so long. It's like that uncle who visits you only when he needs money from you.
He literally rode off into the sunset, and now he is coming back.
This is like when Ric Flair retired and then got that amazing send-off, and then he showed up in TNA a year and a half later.
Yeah. It's exactly like that, Matt.
Jesse manages to get out of the hay because of a pig named Jimmy Dean.
Yeah. Clever name, I gotta say.
Which, you know, that's a reference that goes well over. My kids are like, who's that, Dad? I'm like, you see him at breakfast every morning. It's okay.
That was one when the pig comes out, every adult in my theater is laughing. Every kid is silent. Every adult is laughing.
But she comes into a small playhouse full of other toys who were left by Blaze. And we get Smarty Pants, who was made by Eggman Technology. I was thinking of Sonic the Hedgehog when I heard that name.
I was too.
So he's a potty training toy that's low on batteries, so he acts drunk. And I got to say, I love Conan O'Brien, but he's too much in this movie.
Absolutely. I love him too. I listen to his Conan Needs a Friend podcast every week. I find him just so engaging. I've been watching his show since its first year in existence. I love Conan O'Brien. I was excited to see Conan O'Brien in this. I giggled a couple times at things he said, but you're right. There's just too much of him. And the potty humor just kept going and going and going. And I get that's what he's built as, but Jesus Christ, just, ugh.
There's times that I think it's too far, but there's times that I think it lands better jokes than almost anybody else does. So
this is kind of the most, like, this one puts, like, humor in the backseat the most of the series, which is why this feels so awkward, because it's almost like they're trying to compensate for the rest of the movie not having much. Mm-hmm. So we're like, all right, concentrate all into one character who I feel like he's only here because Conan really wanted to be in a Toy Story movie. I keep saying Conan like I want Schwarzenegger to be in this.
I was going to say.
Conan, not Conan. I guess that's how we should distinguish. But he was less cartoony in South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut than he is in this.
I didn't realize he was in that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's literally, he's the co-host. He plays himself and he gets killed in that movie.
Oh, shit.
Because of the whole Terrence and Phillips situation. But Jesse wants nothing to do with him because we find out that racism exists even amongst the toys. You came from the same tech company as Lilypad, so fuck you. But he nevertheless tells her that he can get her inside the house. Once again, we cut to the high-tech buzzes just being lost in the woods, which is a beat they played in Toy Story 2 when they're lost trying to get to the toy barn.
And I'm just waiting for Zurg to show up sometime, somewhere.
Well, you get your wish.
Eventually, but I'm just...
Really?
Yeah, at the end. End credits.
Oh, shit.
Oh, do you not stay for the credits?
Fuck no.
We left mid-credits, but yeah, we did see him.
I pulled a Garrett. Damn it.
They come across the woods. Speaking of South Park, it's the Woodland Critters, Adam. Except there's no way Pixar's allowing that if you've seen them. So the buzzes all hide again, even though they're not aware of their toys. Like, it's one thing when you forget the rules once, like, I'll give you a mulligan, but this is twice in the same movie.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to give them the mulligan, too, that Smarty Pants is low on batteries, so we got to go over there to get the... Like, I'll give them all of that, but you're absolutely right. They break these rules, and it just drives me nuts.
There's also the beat of, oh, I get grabbed like the alien that goes to Sid in the first movie, and the other buzzes try to rescue him like he's a POW, but he chooses to stay with the kid. It's like, I'm good. Let me be. I just feel like now we're starting to see beats that we've clearly are revisiting a second time to a lesser effect.
Second or third time?
I was trying to be kind.
Okay.
Jesse and Smarty manage to make their way inside the house. She replaces his batteries so he sobers up. Because literally, he walks around this movie yelling like I had to carry Garrett through the streets of Chicago.
You keep bringing that up every goddamn podcast.
Yeah, because I'm still paying off the chiropractor.
Back. You know, here's the thing, boys. Like, we're a little more than midway through, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, about midway through. And I don't want to say I was bored. I wasn't bored. But I was just waiting for something to come together in this. And we have so many of these storylines going on at the same time, and I don't find them coalescing at all. Now, there is a point where I do really go with this film, but I got to tell you guys, at this point, I'm kind of tuned out.
Well, I'm wondering, what is this all going to lead to?
Yeah.
Like, it's clearly there's going to be a part where everyone gets reunited, and how do you resolve the the conflict that's clearly here.
And then you introduce the lily pad, and she pretty much disappears for like 30, 40 minutes.
But she comes across two more toys, and I'm saying, oh my God, we're still introducing characters.
Yeah.
You got Atlas and Snappy. So one's like a picture taker, and one's the phone map. So the creative thing is they're toys that are also technology-based, but they're clearly outdated. So they're relics both as toys and as tech. You know, but Jessie's she's passing out batteries like you're passing out cocaine on a street in the 1980s. Because they go to Blaze's room where they find Bullseye, and Jessie reveals that she used to live in this house and is shocked that the other three have no clue what playtime is. Because they've been tucked away for so long.
They've been like, tucked.
But I guess when you watch Toy Story 3, you see that version of playtime at the daycare. I think it's better to not be played with at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have that PTSD. I don't know. Adam, you seem to be going with this more than we are.
I am a lot, and I wasn't expecting to, but all these beats, I'm distracted a little bit by Joan Cusack's performance. She's not good. She's great. Like, she is astounding. However, it is clear to me that she had mouth or jaw surgery, because even though she has that, she's always had that very distinctive kind of sound of the way that her words are. She sounds like she's got dentures, and it's a little distracting to me. She just seems off a little bit, but I think she is just so good in everything she's delivering. I forget that I'm just watching a Toy Story movie because it has shifted so much from that. But no, I'm impressed by the way all this is delivering for me. You know, I wasn't a big fan of 3. 4, I was in certain parts. I'm having a great time watching this.
And of course, that could also be the engineering and the way they recorded her too.
It could be. But then, when you bring up these new toys, I'm like, yep, we had that camera. Yep, we had that little toy flip phone. We didn't have the toilet towel.
Oh,
I don't even know what that is.
Aaron, I was going to ask you guys about that.
He's doing the big sin. Hey, I recognize that. Therefore, I like it. don't go to the dark side, please.
Yeah, we went through all this in He-Man. Yeah, see, and I looked at the Smarty Pants toy, and I agree with Matt. I think that that character was come up with strictly because Conan O'Brien wanted to be in a Toy Story film. That's a toy that just doesn't. I feel like it just doesn't exist. What are we doing here?
No, and the number one, number two jokes, they don't land until they do. There's so many of them. Yeah, that you're going to hit 50% of them. You're going to hit 30% of them. But because you throw out 100, you still land.
Allergic to Smarty Pants, apparently.
Yeah, it landed about 15% for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's easy to land when you're shooting that many free throws.
Yeah, right.
It's like watching Shaq on the Celtics. But they win this Blaze. Apparently, all the kids in this world, the bad kids far outweigh the good, because Blaze gets broken up with on a play date, which... any kid knows how that feels when your parents like don't want to introduce you to another family so quick, like you can't sleep over from the kid you met at camp. But Jessie seizes the opportunity. She's playing matchmaker and realizes that because they're connected to the same service as Lily. Oh God, let's not talk about the technology of this movie. But Jessie has a photo of herself taken by Snappy, and then Smarty posts it on the internet.
Yeah,
kids, do not post random photos of yourself on the internet.
What is this?
Like, this was very, like, I think a lot of, like, the ways that they have to, like, reconnect everything are very flimsy.
Definitely.
Like, the strands are coming apart like Woody's arm in two. And Bonnie returns with Lily, and she informs the group that Bonnie was playing hide and seek, and the other kids forgot to find her.
Oh.
Which, this was the first gut punch of the movie for me. Would it be the last? Because I came out of this movie emotionally looking like Apollo Creed and Rocky at the end of the first fight.
Really? See, this one didn't get me to well up. It came close at one instance, but for the most part, I was kind of emotionally checked out.
Yeah, but you're a robot.
We've established that.
Yeah, your emotion and inside out, you'd be nothing but meh. But much like anxiety, Lily says, like, I can fix it. So she kind of goes into, like, overdrive to kind of course correct everything, but she doesn't say where Jessie and Bullseye are. So Lily, kind of like when you drunk text your ex, don't ask me why I'm making that analysis, sends a message to Bonnie's father, because the parents in this movie, in these movies, like, this carries over from 4. Her parents are morons.
Yeah.
Yes.
They sure are.
Because she convinces the dad to put the toys in the garage. But Woody and Buzz manage to get taken away, and much like Poison Ivy and Batman and Robin, they pull the plug.
What is, What is this?
That's the I won't kill you, but I don't have to save you line.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're going to let bygones be bygones, but yeah, don't look behind you. While this is going on, we cut back to the high-tech buzzes, which every time I say that, I just cringe.
And Adam's smiling.
They don't bug me. I forget about them. And then I'm just thinking, hey, this is leading somewhere.
Nah.
Eh.
We'll see. But they attempt to rescue the Buzz. They see the family sitting together, and the other Buzz tells them it's okay. And then they see the image of Jesse on the family computer, so they see her Sheriff Star, and they assume she's at Star Command. So this is how they get connected, going to that address. The last movie established GPS exists. But on the way back to Blaze's house, Jesse initiates playtime, and we get a, like, dream or like a playtime scenario where it's like outside of the realm of reality and Bullseye speaks.
Yes.
And I could not believe Alan Cumming did the voice.
Is that who ended up doing it? I didn't look it up. Oh, mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Because they had him on set for Avengers Doomsday and said, hey, you want to make some extra money?
This was fun.
Yeah, this made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of like when they got Robert Goulet to sing in the second one.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
I don't know who thought of this, but it kind of works. And this is how, like, the other toys, that's, like, their first time being played with. And they go back to Bonnie's house. I mean, this movie's got more cuts than Edward Scissorhands. Because Woody and Buzz are interrogating Lily, but she's not budging. And they realize they can manipulate her voice recognition software. So this movie shows you can outsmart Siri.
Yep.
Because they voice command her to do what they want. Find the photo and send the message to everyone who's connected to Lily, which is everyone who's on the Wi-Fi. So, like, again, Duracell must be making hand over fist in this movie between the batteries that seemingly never run out of power and Verizon's Wi-Fi that might as well interconnect me to North Korea.
I'm really surprised these weren't by and large batteries. I mean, come on, we've already established them in this universe. But it's thank God that this wasn't some Starlink Wi-Fi type of story they were trying to tell.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's not... You know, I half expected Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie to show up in this.
Oh, Jesus. 1995 reference. Yeah, what I did like about the creativity of the lily pad is when you get connected, you're all on your own little lily pad. You know what I'm saying? I liked that imagery. I thought that was fun. You're imagining yourself as a frog on this little lily pad. So that was kind of cool to see. But the way they use it is just, man.
Well, I don't like how a movie that's all about, like, how technology kind of gives us tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You ultimately beat the technology by interconnecting everyone.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before, but I love the fact that this character, I guess you can say, this lily pad, she's going to be the Buzz, right? She's going to be the antagonist of this film, or at least the thing that everybody's against, and that's the way it starts off. But at this point, we have zagged from that storyline, and she becomes just as irrelevant. I like that arc. I really do. I just hate how many fucking times we have cut in the course of this film. But I like the way they do not make her the quote-unquote villain of this film.
I like that. I like the way they switch. I love the voice activation scene, because my car... It is amazingly how many times randomly somebody will say, hey, Google. Sorry to everybody that I just ruined. Hey, Siri.
My microwave just went off.
And I'll be listening to something and suddenly I'll be driving and my car will prompt up. Yes. What action would you like to take? And I'm just like, God bless it. Little smart things like that. It is totally lost on the kids. But if you've experienced it, you're like, yep, there we go. Just like unplugging lily pad. Oh, my goodness. As a parent. You have accidentally let your child's toy run out of juice.
I mean, speaking of running out of juice, Bonnie realizes that she lost Jesse and Bullseye. So her and the mom get on the address. Woody and Buzz hitch a ride on the back of the car, which is a neat callback to the first movie.
Yeah.
And on the way to the house, Bonnie sees the group chat. And man, this poor girl's getting harassed now by text messaging, which is one of the more insidious aspects of social media is how, I mean, you look at online, look at the trolling that happens anytime a movie bombs and people try to blame certain people. And but yeah, this poor girl, like, she's gonna grow up to be freaking
super villain.
Yeah, this is the origin story for Syndrome, basically. She will be the villain in Incredibles 3.
Yeah, this, it's not bad enough she's getting bullied by these chicks at this sleepover, but now she's getting cyber bullied as well. I mean, again, just the continued beatdown of this. Oh, tough to watch.
This broke me. Yeah. This absolutely broke me, because the way that she just appears crestfallen and doesn't answer and wipes her face, I've seen that look. Mm. And oh my God, that was a flashback moment in my real life that I'm proud of them for going there, because it's so perfectly done.
So Lily feels bad about her involvement, and Bonnie realizes that she doesn't want Jesse and Bullseye because of all the pain that's coming because of her wanting to play, because she's trying to blend in. And Blaze is completely confused. And again, like, miscommunication and like mixed signals are all paramount in this movie, because Jesse yells at the three of them for like Bonnie, and she literally pushes Smarty until he falls on the floor. I kind of hope she killed him. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of sick of him at this point. She gets on top of the horse, goes towards the tire swing tree. And then Woody and Buzz are also confused because they're here now. And Woody gets captured by the high-tech Buzzes. And how does he break them down? He tells them they're toys and that Zurg is their father. So we're going back to this well.
Yep.
Which also completely undermines Lightyear. So point in its favor.
Even Pixar's acknowledging that they fucked up.
But you know what? You mentioned at the beginning of this film, Matt, you mentioned the box office, but we didn't really dwell on the budget. This thing is $250 million. Yeah. And the actors had to have been, what, 10, 15 of that, maybe? So I guess all the money's on the screen, but man, this fucker was expensive.
Yeah, I don't know how it all breaks down, but clearly in their mind, there wasn't enough to go to everybody. But they head inside the house, and they all go to find Jesse. And Bonnie comes clean to her mom about how she feels when the other girls attack her. And Lily realizes she's the cause of everything and literally tries to throw herself onto a truck because she thinks this is what Bonnie needs. And holy crap, this got me.
Something that in the last movie was a joke with I'm trash. You know, it was laughable. It was about finding your place. This one is just done so much. The pathos is definitely different with Lily.
You know what, Adam? I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right. They have turned a joke from the previous film, well, part four, into this complete gut punch. And yeah, you're right. It hit me too.
Is that whole thing of like, what do you do when you feel like you have no purpose? The purpose that you thought you had is not working in your mind. This is what Pixar has always been good at, is making adults call their therapist the next day. Because it doesn't stop there. I thought, okay, this is it. I'm okay. And then we cut back to Jesse on that goddamn swing.
Holy shit. This is what got me, boys. I mean, I don't have kids like you guys do, but this is the part. And you got to take it as a contrivance, right? Like, you got to take it as, okay, how is it that she's putting like her life in this box and burying it and telling about the fact that she named her kid after this toy? Why would she even put that in a journal or whatever? But you can tell that it's here to propel Jesse forward and give her a purpose. And this is what I think Pixar has always been good at. I've been waiting for this moment. I've been waiting for me to actually feel something for any of these people other than just devastation for Bonnie. This is what did it for me.
Oof. And because we've gone through it, we went through it in two. We went through it when she thought that they were going to be abandoned in three, and to go back and find a resolution is heartfelt, but still just, God dang, I can't believe, like, it is a full circle moment of, sorry, you didn't think you needed to bring your tissues. We got you now.
Yeah, because I knew, as I kind of led the show during the flashbacks, I knew this was going to come back in some capacity, because we never got like the closure of like what happened after she got put in the box and
removed. Because I think we're gonna meet Emily again. Like, I think it is obvious, and I think the movie tells us we're gonna see Emily. Mm-hmm. We don't.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be. So I always hated the theory that Andy's mom was Emily.
Yeah, I heard that theory too.
Which that's the Star Warsification of Toy Story. I did not need, but they got the Jesse was here on the wall, and I'm thinking, okay, that's a little odd to do it over a toy that you clearly were comfortable removing. Then there was a 5-second delay where I said, oh no. So I put the pieces together. because I didn't want to, but she opens that fucking lunchbox, and I saw the picture, and I was like, oh my God. This hit me in a way that like the ending of three got people. Because it's rediscovering a purpose you never realized that you had. Like, this is very much the the gratification parents feel when you watch your kid, who you're not necessarily in their life anymore, but you watch them on social media graduating high school, or just because you're not there every day doesn't mean that your importance to them is any less significant than whoever's the constant. Like, I think that's a very compelling message, and I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people who watch this. Like, I don't think, again, I think parents will get much more out of that scene than kids will.
And again, if you take the contrivance out, it does work.
Yeah. I don't like how we got here, but sometimes the payoff can kind of justify the rocky journey. And I think we're going to meet the daughter at some point. Stay tuned for Toy Story 6 predictions, everyone. But Jessie overcomes her sadness, and the other toys arrive, and they all make a plan to go reunite Bonnie and Blaze. So they use Smarty to send a message to Lily, who says she's on a moving truck, and they try to pinpoint her movement by taking pictures, which, don't do this, anyone. Look.
My God. Yeah. This is the wrong message to send.
Yeah, this is not the kind of mixed signal Disney should be sending, especially from a John Lasseter production.
Ooh.
The toys race across town. Lily connects to the internet, and she distributes a firmware update, which makes the high-tech buzzes become drones. Literally, these toys are worth a shitload of money. They're worth more than these goddamn iPads.
You know what, though? I gotta say, I have hated these multiple buzzes this entire film. I thought this was fun. I loved when she just kind of, what'd she do, scan that QR code or something, turn them all into drones?
Yeah, it was an app update.
Oh, it was, I actually found that to be kind of clever.
It's absolutely funny. Plays in, especially when I look at where this movie's made at.
Yeah.
You know, it literally made in Silicon Valley. And so this type of stuff, is it a stretch too far? Absolutely. And I have a great time laughing with it.
And it's kind of the full circle thing of one, falling with style. Now they can literally fly. Like, yeah. That's kind of cool.
And it's one of the six lines that Tom Hanks gets to have in this movie.
And also Buzz and Jesse finally admit their feelings to each other as they complete the plan. And they manage to send another message to Bonnie's family, and Blaze is able to break through Bonnie's shell that admits she enjoyed playing with Jesse and Bullseye. And finally, Bonnie gets a happy ending after 90 minutes of getting beaten down like Rocky Balboa.
Oh, hold that thought.
She should have stood up and said, hey, I didn't hear no bell.
You know what, though? After sitting through the fucking beatdown, I really enjoyed this. I love the fact that these two girls imagine a wedding. I find all of this to be, after not really having that good of a time with this film, I found this to be a pretty damn good payoff.
I love that at the end of the day, it comes down to just, we're going to go back and play.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to smile. We're going to have fun. We're going to laugh. We're going to be kids. We're going to play.
Yeah, it's that just like, don't be afraid to just talk to someone. Put down the screen and have a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, put down the screen and put down the toy. Have your one-on-one with people. And I do find that to be a good part of Jessie's arc in realizing that it was the connection with Emily that made her realize, well, yeah, she needs one-on-one with somebody else. All that really worked for me.
So they all connect, and Woody reunites. Hey, nice to see Bo Peep for 30 seconds. And Duke Kaboom. And they go, Poochie goes back to his home planet because they go, they go back to the jungle, never to be seen again.
I think they brought Woody and just left.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be, screw you guys, I'm doing him.
Bo Peep was like, okay, fine, go do your thing. I'll take care of the kids at home.
This is like The Incredibles when he goes out bowling, quote unquote.
And you know what? After getting my full fill of Bo Peep in part 4, this was enough of her for me. Like, this is just the right amount for me anyway.
Yeah, they did to her what they did to Rose in Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
So Buzz and Jessie have a wedding in the context of shipping, and the toys resume their play pretend. Bonnie and Blaze resume their newfound friendship as credits roll, but the movie's not done.
I could not help but laugh out loud. In the middle of them playing, and Buzz puts the ring on, you hear Bonnie's mom, Bonnie, have you seen my wedding ring?
Yeah, that was fun.
It's just... like, yeah. Kids, it is such a kid's moment to do something like take a parent's wedding ring and put it on a toy. Ugh.
But it's not done, because we see a boy having trouble making friends at a playground. One of the high-tech buzzes flies down to him, and then the whole swarm of them come up like Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yeah, I thought of The Birds.
And I was thinking, what the fuck is about to happen?
I know, me too.
I thought they were about to like get red eyes and start, you know, they I thought it was going to turn into Child's Play.
They went from Platoon and Apocalypse Now to The Birds.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, actually.
Oh, it's at a schoolyard.
Yeah, like, it's like at birds. A like playground.
Oh, damn. I should have stuck around.
So all the high-tech buzzes appear, and one of the teachers all connect, and they all play with each other. Then this other kid brings out his high-tech evil Emperor Zurg.
Yep.
And then there's another post-credit scene.
Oh, damn.
Yep.
Where Pizza with Sunglasses and Lily do a rap song that Lily made from what Jesse said earlier.
It's awful. And that's Bad Bunny, the pizza.
Yeah, it's as bad as the Taylor Swift song that ends the movie.
It's so bad.
That's why they got Bad Bunny.
Mm-hmm. It's so bad. I think
like that song was so bad I missed Randy Newman.
Wow. After
I knew it, I knew you.
After five and a half podcasts of ripping him a new one, you kind of missed him at the end of this.
It's been 7 years.
Yeah.
But will it be 7 years before we review another Toy Story movie? That's the big question. But time for business to get down to brass tacks. Scale of 1 to 10, what do you give Toy Story 5? Do I go to Woody or do I go to Buzz first? I'm not going to say who's who. I'm going to go to Adam first.
Sorry, it's Woody joke. It'd be easy to... God damn. And a Buzz joke would work as well. So, all right. I had no neat desire to see this movie. I tried to put it off, tried to get around it. I was hoping that I'd be able to find it bootleg and I could watch it at home before I had to go. And I have AMC A-list, so I wasn't even paying to see it. And I was trying to get away from this movie. But I am so glad that I did. For what I felt was a pretty poor marketing job, other than just saying, hey, we're Toy Story, you're going to go see us, give us your money. I mean, shoot, this thing isn't hooked up with McDonald's. It's not hooked up with anything else. I haven't even seen Toy Story 5 toys out and about. So it's marketing and toys and tie-ins seem to be missing. But I didn't think that they would have anything new to say. And I felt that having a technology versus toy discussion would have been great 15 years ago. What they've done here, though, is completely, once again, for the fifth time, so I guess I shouldn't be surprised, subvert the expectations of what you think it's going to be. It's not simply a tech versus toy movie. It's about, and I love this because it is something that we have just drilled into our kids over and over, communication solves problems. Communication overcomes talking and meeting and looking somebody in the eye and shaking a hand and making eye contact and just having a connection solves things. And that's what this movie is. And the toys are realizing that it's not about playing with us. It's about their person playing with another person. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. The conjuncture of toys and tech coming together to solve the day, and not really even in a ham-fisted way, is a compliment to the way this thing is written. It bounces around more than a regular Toy Story movie. I can admit that. The only time the cut I felt was weird was at the very beginning of the movie. Outside of that, I didn't have an issue with the way that it was cut, but I could completely understand. This movie is fairly short, and I appreciate that, because I could see a world where they made a two-hour Toy Story movie, and I'd be just bemoaning the entire time. But I think Joan Cusack is amazing. I think Greta Lee as Lilypad does a really, really good job. I think the other toys and the way that they're brought in do very good. I didn't recognize Conan O'Brien until they make it clear and give him his hair with, you know, at the final play little set that they do there. But everything in this movie works so well for me that I was an emotional wreck by the end of it. I think it is one of the most solid emotional beats from credit to credit, and I absolutely loved it for that. I do hold, though, that it pushes it more into an Inside Out story than Toy Story, and I'm okay with it because I'm happy with what I got when I left the theater. So I think this thing is pretty damn amazing. Didn't know what I wanted, but it gave me more than I needed. So I'm giving this an 8. I absolutely love Toy Story 5, and I never thought I was going to say that.
Wow, an 8 on 10 for a movie that's the fifth entry in a franchise that's over 30 years old. That's kind of a rarity, Garrett, but based on this conversation, I don't think you're going quite that high. Am I out of the ballpark?
And by the way, this is
like your Mets.
Oh my God. And by the way, this is the 6th. How quick we forget Lightyear. Yeah. You know what? I got to say, this was the hardest review I've had to do all year, because I was not going to give the film a pass just because we went back to the Toy Story land after realizing how much Pixar had fucked up last week with Lightyear. At the same time I'm watching this film, I'm thinking to myself, do I have an in? And this is why I love doing these podcasts, is because Everything Adam is complimenting this movie for is what I'm going to ding it for. I came in looking for a Toy Story. What I got was Inside Out. Now, I like Inside Out. Don't love them. But some of these Toy Story movies, I think I've been very clear in the fact I love quite a few of them. I like Toy Story 4 more than this movie. When you have the story that they have put out there, and then they try to mask that with laughs, and those laughs don't hit, I found myself getting pretty tuned out throughout the course of this film. However, it pulls itself together by the end. I hated seeing this poor girl just get beat down. I don't know how many times I have to say that, into depression. I don't know if that's a healthy thing for kids to see. However, I do like the message that technology does not solve these issues. It is getting out there, it is playing, it is human connection that will help you with any emotional resonance that you have. And that comes down to parenting. I do like that message. I don't like the way this movie delivers it. There are parts of this movie that I really did like, but I never welled up. I got close when Jesse found the box at the tire swing, but this by far is the least Toy Story movie for me, the least successful. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 6 because I had a good enough time with what was here, but an overabundance of Conan O'Brien and an overabundance of human beatdowns and not enough toys is its undoing. And the toys that we do get, with the return of Woody, with the multiple Buzzes, which finally pays off at the end, I just don't think the whole movie coalesces. And for that, it's going to be a 6/10 for me.
Well, call me Steeler's wheel because I'm stuck in the middle of both of you. I find that this exceeded my expectations, but I'm at the point now where I will just stop doubting this franchise because of the ones with Toy Story in the title, I've liked them all, which not a lot of franchises that get to 5 films, I can say that about. In fact, most when they get to 3, I can't even say that about. So it's a compliment that they've kept this going. But I think this reaffirms that this franchise has now shifted into being much more for the parents who watched the original as children themselves than necessarily the modern generation of kids going to see it because they fully want to. Now, I think they fully exist because I definitely saw enjoyment when Riker, Harrison, and Logan watch this, but the challenge for me is just I think the destination is perfect. I love what this movie has to say, and there's plenty of movies that where I agree with the message, but I don't like how it's delivered. For me, the flaw is in the roadmap that they followed. I think there's too many detours in this. I was thinking of Toy Story 4 with that GPS taken over, because I kind of wish ChatGPT kind of took a look at this script and fleshed it out, because I think I like almost all the beats. I just think there's too many subplots. I think the whole Buzz thing could have been done without. And I also think that Woody's reintroduction just feels like a obligatory cameo and not necessarily something that was done with the finality that both 3 and 4 promised. So now they definitely can't pull that card again if they try to do it in 6. I'm going to give it a 7, but it's a very strong 7. I wonder if this is going to be a movie, because when I first saw 4, I gave it a 6. And it's raised significantly higher in my estimation if you listen to the show from a few weeks ago. And I have a strong feeling that this could follow suit with that. But it remains to be seen, in large part because I guarantee we're getting a 6. And I have a strong feeling that it's going to conclude this chapter. And now I'm viewing this 4 and 5 as kind of parts 1 and 2 of a new story building to a part 6. But still a 7. I mean, considering my minimal expectations as far as like excitement, good job, all things considered. All right, boys, we've done 6 movies. Yes, 6, everyone. Time to rank these suckers. And can we just get the obvious out of the way? Do we all have Lightyear at the bottom?
Yes.
Okay. So for the sake of...
Yeah. Oh, yes, I do.
I was going to say, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
All right, so we're just going to rank now because we got business out of the way. Now we're just going to rank movies with Toy Story in the title. So you can go best to worst, you can go worst to best, whoever wants to go. Garrett, why don't you go first since Adam gave his thoughts first?
Okay, I'll go ahead. I have 3, 1, 2, 4, and 5. 3, the last 5 minutes of that. There hasn't been a movie that's come out in the last 15 years that's hit me as much as that movie has. 1, it's probably due to nostalgia, it's probably due to I remember the craze for it. I remember the rush for it, as I mentioned on that podcast, that the rentals, the buys, and everything else. And my brother just falling in love with it, getting a Woody toy, everything that surrounded it. Two, it has never been a huge one for me. I know a lot of people hold that high. In fact, I think Matt gave it a perfect score. It's not a perfect film for me, but I really did enjoy that. And then, you know, four's fine. I had a better time with it than I was expecting. And I've given my say on five. That's the bottom of the list for me. Well, next to Lightyear, for sure.
So we got 3, 1, 2, 4, 5.
Yes, sir.
Well, sounds like we're giving a combination that you find in a Resident Evil safe. You tell I'm excited for that movie come September? All right, Adam, I have a feeling yours are going to be slightly a delineation.
I can guarantee it. That's almost the combination I have on my luggage. That's
Happy birthday, Mel Brooks, by the way. 100 years old.
There we go. Love you.
Yeah, I wish he was in this one because he was in the last one.
That's right.
All right, yeah, I could definitely say it's going to be different. So I'll go top down. So my order, I'm going Toy Story 2, Toy Story 5, 4, 3.
Wow.
So for anybody that's saying, yes, I put 3 at the bottom of the actual Toy Story propers.
Wow.
Below 4. I don't like anything with Sunnyside. I just don't. I don't like Lotso. I don't like Sunnyside. I don't like Big Baby. Okay, yeah, they almost melt in an incinerator. Ooh, it looks good. I don't like the movie. I think it does a good job of ripping off everything that was great about 2. Go back and listen to that from a couple weeks ago.
What good friends we are. I have it on top. You have it on the bottom.
And that's what she said.
A lot of really close friends do that from time to time.
Sometimes you got a bottom from the top. Sometimes you got a top from the bottom.
So mine is kind of a combination of your, like, it's different, but there's some similarities. Much like Adam, I have 2 as my number 1. But I didn't give it a perfect score, Garrett. I gave it a 9.
You gave it a 9. Okay. I seem to remember you. Maybe you did at the old place.
I did at the old place. Yeah. But I don't want to say like my opinion lowered. I'm just trying to be more conservative with my tens. So I go 2 and I'm going 4 as my number 2. Like I think going back to it this time with the new perspective of like parental wisdom, there was a lot more that spoke to me about that movie. And I just think what they did with Forky is one of the biggest subversions of my expectations I've ever seen in a movie. And I really like the closure we got with Woody choosing to go off. I loved the stuff they did with Gabby Gabby. I like that we scared kids with ventriloquist dummies. I thought Key and Peele were hilarious. So that's my favorite, not named number 2. But neck and neck with it is number 1. I think that it started this whole trend. It was a pioneering movie at the time, and it still holds up remarkably well. And then I'm going 5. So I also have 3 at the bottom.
Boy, you guys.
Well, unless you count Lightyear, which we all kind of don't. Wow. but look, I gave 3 a 7. And 5. So the fact that I had the lowest score in this main franchise is a 7, that's a pretty damn high aggregate score. And I think you could make the argument this is one of the most consistent franchises we have in the history of cinema.
I don't think that can be argued, but I did give this one a 6. It's the lowest one for me, but man, you guys putting 3 down there. Interesting.
Yeah, I share a lot. Like, I don't feel, as you remember, I don't feel to the same degree that Adam did.
Mm-hmm.
Degree, because he almost burned up in a furnace. But I think a lot of, you know, you complained about this one borrowing too much from the previous ones. I still think 3 is the biggest offender of, like, cut and paste. For most parts, but look, it's still a damn good movie, and I'm curious to see. Look, the only question is, what year is number 6 going to come?
Yeah,
yep. Are they going to do it by 2030?
Like, that's what's going to come down to. I'm going to say summer of 2031, 5 years.
I think they're going to try to do it quicker, just because I think they went into 4 literally thinking it was the end, and I think some way into this they went, we're definitely going to get another one out of this.
Well, yeah. Again, they built $1 billion worth of stuff in both Disney parks. They had to justify this somehow. But the days of taking a movie and putting it on a hard drive and then saving it are done. They can do this much more efficiently than they did back in 1999. So I agree with you guys. I do think we're going to get it, and I think we're going to get it sooner rather than later. I predict 4 years. I don't think they're going to wait too long.
Efficiently, but it's still going to cost $250 million for an animated 90-minute movie. without Robert Downey Jr. in it.
With the losses of Star Wars and everything else. This fucking Avengers movie better hit the fucking green for them to justify.
They're re-releasing Endgame in 2 months.
Yeah, they're going to be printing out all the bills that have lily pad on.
Which means, and that just means they're going to release Avatar next year because they keep playing leapfrog with those two. Uh-huh. And I'll be there.
Well, Garrett, are we going to talk about what we have coming down the pipe?
Yes. Yes, we are. Next week, we're going to do another new release. We're going to do one that hasn't done so well, at least at press time. We're going to do our bit of completionism, and we talked about Superman last year. People who listened to that podcast know I didn't think it got off on a best foot. Here we have Supergirl, and that is not getting the best reviews, but who knows where we're going to fall on that. So we're going to complete that arc next week. And then after that, you know, they do say that the three of us do throw some punches on these podcasts and we do lay some haymakers into each other. But Matt has taken it upon himself to schedule yet another anniversary set of podcasts that has a lot of punching in them. We are doing Rocky. We're doing the first set. We're doing one through Rocky Balboa, and then we're doing the three Creed films. Are we going to separate them? I don't know. We have another retrospective that is kind of on ice right now as far as when we're going to eventually get to do it because of one of the co-hosts on that is going through something pretty personal right now. So who knows if that's going to happen, but we are doing Rocky through Rocky Balboa and then the three Creed films. I have massive opinions on all of them. That's what's coming down the pike. Adam, are you excited? I mean, you and I had Rocky marathons way back when.
I can't wait. I've had Rocky marathons. I had the VHS set of 1 through 5, and I would pop in a random tape when I would work out when I had my own place with a bench and Olympic plates inside. So that's the kind of, I mean, I would play the best of Rocky soundtrack in my car. That CD and Top Gun were like 1 and 2 loaded in the CD changer.
What the hell was on that CD? Just the main theme 13 times?
No, I mean, you had Eye of the Tiger. You had
No Easy Way Out.
Burning Heart. You had the end fights of all of them on there.
Living in America.
Yeah, Living in America. I remember that CD, actually. I remember when you bought that.
Yeah, so they just copy and pasted the soundtrack for Rocky
pretty much.
IV.
Well, though, they copy-pasted all four of them pretty much in one.
Rocky IV and then, you know, 2 songs from each.
Yes. And, of course, Stallone wanting to put 5, like, way in the pasture was like, fuck, no, I'm not going to put fucking Joey Bielis on that one. I'm just going to do the ones that people remember fondly. So I remember that CD very well.
Yeah, but yeah, I can't wait because I think that's a series that shows how film has changed throughout the decades. And I think we get to watch that from Rocky to Rocky Balboa to Creed, and I think that's going to be just fascinating to talk about.
And not only that, but you're seeing the evolution of a star. And
yeah, it is. It's for Stallone what Mission Impossible is for Tom Cruise.
Very good point. That's exactly what it is, and that's going to be fun to discuss. And yeah, I did do this at the old place, but it did not have either of these two on then, and we get into that on the first show. So yeah, I'm really stoked to be talking about this. Almost as excited as I was for Masters of the Universe. Matt, where do you fall on Rocky before we get there?
Well, unlike the Italian stallion, I actually could throw a jab. I hate the city of Philadelphia. I hate their sports teams. So I don't like having to advocate for a city where their most prophetic sports figure is a guy who doesn't fucking exist. But I'm also somebody whose my intro was the first Creed movie. I saw Creed before I saw any of the Rocky films.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, that was me. That was my one, like, millennial card that I've played with, like, franchises.
So Supergirl next week, and then we dive into Rocky. So exciting month plus that we have coming up.
Yeah, and until next week when we start throwing punches on Supergirl in all likelihood, given the track record. I am not a podcast. I am a potty trainer. Show some respect. Thank you, gentlemen.
I'm going to have some words with this lily pad and let her know how things are run around here.
Try to stay calm, Jesse.
Buzz, you know me. I'm the definition of calm.
That's not going to work.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Good job, troops.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Let's go home. I'm glad I got to see you again.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as Star Wars, the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, Indiana Jones, Masters of the Universe, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Beetlejuice films, the Planet of the Apes franchise, the Incredibles films, and so much more.
I don't believe that man's ever been to medical school.
I was listening. I'm always listening.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Ah, that went well.
It's good to see them fighting again.
It sure is.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
You have saved our lives. We are eternally grateful.
Come on, I'm not lying down on the job.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, and Dave.
You would not believe what I've been through tonight.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You got a lot to look forward to, folks.
Scheduling done by Matt.
My hero!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Potato Head, Mr. and Mrs.
Here.
Trikus, check, 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 check.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
You still worried?
About Andy? Nah. It'll be fun while it lasts.
I'm proud of you, cowboy.
Besides, when it all ends, I'll have old Buzz Lightyear to keep me company. For infinity and beyond.
But I tell him it's a part-time job, basically.
It pretty much is.
Especially like this month. Like, I've seen this, I've seen Supergirl, I've seen... I think those are the only two. This and Supergirl, I've seen both. So I'm basically caught up.
So you did see it too, so we've all seen it. Okay.
Yeah. I saw it. I saw it yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you saw it. I didn't know Matt had seen it.
Maybe we can do that next week, and I can plan to plant that podcast after this one.
So Evil Dead is already coming. Damn.
Yeah, it's coming out July 1st.
They bumped it. They bumped it up significantly, which tells me either they have a lot of confidence in it or
none.
That mummy movie didn't make a lot of money, so we need to make up our losses.
Yeah. Is it the same company doing it?
I think so. Mm. I think it's Screen Gems.
Mm. They lost their ass on that mummy movie.
Did you see it, Adam?
Nope. Oh. It's in my playlist right now on Plex, though, so.
Ugh. Boy, oh boy.
I kept meaning to, but no, I'm busy watching Faces of Death.
Why?
Because it's Faces of Death and I'm a Gen Xer.
Good fucking God. Oh my God.
They're getting exactly what they were hoping for when they freaking greenlit it.
Let's get back to millennials and talk about Toy Story. That makes me sick.
But I didn't know what Stanton movie we were going to get. He could deliver some absolute beauties, and then he could make sure that he's doing his job for the studio and keeping them around.
And making John Carter.
Did he do John Carter?
He did.
Yeah, he directed that.
He did.
But then he was banished to animation for life.
I have that as a 3D DVD and have never opened it.
Are you serious?
Yes. And I have Deja Thori's comics and I've still never watched that movie.
Mister, I'll defend Tomorrowland to never end, to no end for Brad Bird. You will not watch an Andrew Stanton directed live action film?
Oh, I'm going to watch it now.
Okay.
You're not missing much, I hate to say it. But yeah, that's kind of the like,
I think she grew up with it as a kid and loves it. I'm truly gonna give her that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they added a couple extra zeros on the check. Didn't hurt.
I'm sure that didn't hurt. I might be a sucker, but I'm gonna believe she loves it.
I'm not giving her any credit, especially with her taste in men.
Oh, she hasn't tasted that man. Sorry, parents. That'll be my like last that. One.
She's been inside more football players than CTE.
Oh shit!
And I feel like the only reason, speaking of bloopers, that they got hurt is because Tom Hanks has gotten to the point in his career where he is okay being a supporting character. I don't think it's an ego thing, but I didn't really feel like his return was something I fully cared about.
Yeah, and I didn't know how it was going to be handled.
Adam, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I didn't know how that was.
And, you know, we reviewed Masters of the Universe just a few weeks ago, and I was thinking, God, did they get Kristen Wiig for this? Like, it kind of sounded like Kristen Wiig. No, it's just this chick from Past Lives, which is a good movie from a few years ago.
But... Hey, it's from our recently reviewed... Oh, no, we didn't review Tron Ares. Shoot, she's in Tron Ares.
No, nobody even saw that, let alone reviewed it.
Remember I said I wanted ears on this podcast. We won't get them with that. So, like, I like the fact that they got...
Jesse manages to get out of the hay because of a pig named Jimmy Dean.
Yeah. Clever name, I gotta say.
Which, you know, that's a reference that goes well over. My kids are like, who's that, Dad? I'm like, you see him at breakfast every morning. It's okay.
That was one when the pig comes out, every adult in my theater is laughing. Every kid is silent. Every adult is laughing.
God, Matt, you make sausage every morning? God, I can't wait to come to your house.
No, not every morning.
Oh, my fiance hates breakfast.
And turkey bacon.
Damn.
I gotta tell you, turkey bacon tastes a lot, it's a lot better than actual pig bacon. I know that's sacrilege, but it doesn't give you the heartburn that regular bacon does.
Perfect.
But she comes in. And then they see the image of Jesse on the family computer, so they see her sheriff star, and they assume she's at Star Command. So this is how they get connected. Going to that address. The last movie established GPS exists.
Yeah. Isn't one of these like a GPS or GPS thing? Or am I thinking... I'm thinking of 4, aren't I?
No, I think you're jumping ahead a little bit.
Oh, okay, okay.
And this is how, like, the other toys, that's like their first time being played with. And, excuse me, they go back to Bonnie's house.
Hi, toys!